All right, so what we concluded with last week, again, was this, continuing this description of the idea of the inner avodah and the outer avodah, and how the two really need to go together. Even as we need to focus on the mitzvahs that we actually do, when they are left empty of the soul of them, they really don't have the impact that they need to have, and it's really a combination of the both, in which the mitzvahs that we do are infused with the chovas halavavos, with the inner feelings, thought, all of that, which has no boundary. That's what the last thing that we discussed. Moshe is up there for 40 days and 40 nights. It wasn't just to learn information. It was because the heart has no limitation. The heart has no boundary, and to understand how to fulfill those mitzvahs of the heart takes all the time. So you open up a siddur to Kriya Shema. So Rav Olda has a remez, a hint, to the idea that he's been putting forth. You can open up to any one of the various Kriya Shemas. Let's see, the one that I'm opening up to is on page 90 and 92 from Shacharis. So he writes, just getting started, come on in. So we're on Ois, I'm an Ois Gimel. If you want to follow inside on page Yud Dalet in Rav Olda, just to follow where I'm reading. So he writes, where do we start? How do we accomplish this? How are we supposed to do this idea of infusing our mitzvahs that we do with the spiritual component to that? How do we bring the neshama into the acts that we do? Where do we start? So he says, the main thing that you need to start is bedikta ka mitzvah samaisis. The place to start is in a careful observance of the actual mitzvahs. Again, the purpose is bringing the neshama in. Where do you start? Start by just doing the right things. And he brings a proof to this from Shema. So before we read it inside, let's look at the first two paragraphs for what he's about to point out. First paragraph of Shema, of course, it starts with the actual phrase of the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which is one of those important mitzvahs in which we describe the yichud of Hashem, the oneness, uniqueness, individual aspect, all of the concepts which are much beyond the scope of what we're doing right now. But it starts with this lofty idea of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What's the next idea we go to? The Ohavta Es Hashem Elokecha, the mitzvah of loving Hashem. Vayu Hazivarim Ha'ela, what's that a mitzvah about? These words should be upon your heart. Teach them to your children and speak of them when you sit in your home. What's that about? Talmud Torah, correct. That's the mitzvah of learning, that these words should be on your hearts. They should be spoken to your children. You should be speaking about them when you're walking on your way, when you're sitting at home, all over the place. And then what does the paragraph conclude with? Which two mitzvahs? Tefillin and mezuzah. So if we posted an outline as far as the order of the mitzvahs described in the first paragraph of Shema, we start with the lofty mitzvahs of the Yichud Hashem, Ahavas Hashem. So we start up there on a high plane, and then what are the next three? The order is Torah, Tefillin, and mezuzah. That's the order that we have in the first paragraph of Shema. So as Rav Olda, if you look at the second paragraph of Shema, you'll find a different order of the mitzvahs. So the first half of the Shema describes the concept of punishment and reward, and then we get into the exile, that if you stray from my path, I will get angry at you, and I will send you out of the land. So let's pick up halfway through the paragraph, we'll just read it through in the English to get right into you, and you will be swiftly banished, it's right in the middle of the paragraph, you will be swiftly banished from the goodly land which Hashem gives you. Now, starting from here, let's go through, everyone have your Ramatur?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through the order of the mitzvahs that we have described. Again, the main three that we want to talk about are the mitzvah of Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah. The order that we had in the first paragraph was that. First Torah, Torah, Tefillin, and then Mezuzah. What does the Torah say over here? And what is in the second paragraph of Shema? You will be swiftly banished from the goodly land which Hashem gives you. Place these words of mine upon your heart and upon your soul. Bind them for a sign upon your arm and let them be tefillin between your eyes. Tefillin. Teach them to your children to discuss them while you sit in your home, while you walk on the way, when you're tired, when you rise. Mitzvah of Torah. And write them on your doorposts of your house and upon your gates. Mezuzah. In order to prolong your days and the days of your children. What's the order? How do we switch from the first paragraph to the second paragraph? first paragraph. Correct. In the first paragraph, we start with the lofty mitzvahs of Shema and love of God. Then we go to Torah, and then the actual mitzvahs of the physical mitzvahs of Tefillin and then Mezuzah. In the second paragraph, following the exile, being banished from the land, what does the Torah say? Put on Tefillin, learn Torah, fulfill the mitzvah of Mezuzah. I have to say, until I saw this in his introduction, this is now a couple years ago when I first saw this, but until then, I had been saying Shema for a long time before that, I never noticed that. Mm-hmm. I never noticed the switch of the order.
Why is Mezuzah so important that it's even put in here?
Okay, fair question, separate question.
And Torah, or
not? Now, Mezuzah does have the element that it actually has the cloth, mm-hmm. it has the parchment, and the first two paragraphs of Shema written on it, so as far as the mitzvah goes, it has that same holiness, like tefillin, which are put on anything, then it's bound upon the doorpost. And it's you know, it's the kind of mitzvah which we don't think about as much, because once you've done it once, it just sort of stays there. Mm-hmm. But I do have to tell you that if you read the Rambam, maybe we'll do this one day. This is actually right along the alley of what we're speaking about. Mezuzah is a great mitzvah, which you say, is it a chovas ha'levavos or a chovas ha'ivarim? Is it a mitzvah upon our hearts or a mitzvah upon our body to do mezuzah?
Heart. Starts with both answer.
Yeah. Well, there's not much physical doing with it.
You know? Well, how do you fulfill the mitzvah?
I mean, you have to put it on the door.
Right? So I would say it's a mitzvah upon the body. In other words, what's our rule? Is it seen? Is it unseen? The mitzvah is, if you have a home, put up a mezuzah.
Continuing mitzvah seems to just be going on by itself.
At first blush, it's a mitzvah upon the body. I have an obligation to do it. Just like I have a mitzvah to put up a fence if I have a roof. You have a roof on your house. It's accessible to people. Put up a fence. What's the mitzvah of putting up a fence? What's the mitzvah of putting up the mezuzah? I make a bracha. I do an act. I buy my parchment. I buy my case. I put it up. That's my mitzvah. So if we'll read the Rambam, which is a nice thing that we should do one day, when he describes the thought process of a person who has a mezuzah, how every single time he walks past the door, and he thinks of the two paragraphs that are contained therein, the paragraphs that we just read, the first paragraph for Shema, and the second paragraph for Shema, and he thinks of the Yichud Hashem, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and he thinks of the Ahavos Hashem, the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, and then he thinks about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and he thinks about the mitzvah of the Tefillin, and it's an exhausting experience just to read the Rambam describe for three lines the thought process that a person has every single time he walks from one room to another room. Yes, maybe there was once a bodily mitzvah that needed to be done of establishing the mezuzah on your door, but the experience of the mezuzah is totally different in the Rambam's world than it is in ours. I mean, we're lucky if we even remember to kiss it. I mean, what's the purpose of that? That's really just to remind us that there's something there. Yeah. He's exhausted every time he walks through a door. So that would actually be, as we go on, and maybe we could even do it this week, as a homework assignment, that would be the kind of thing where we say, this is our homework for the week. Once a day, we would actually come up with a text that we would need to think to ourselves, and we'd be responsible once a day, upon walking through our front door, to stop and go through that text. What I'm saying, so when you say, that's the kind of projects that we're working on, transforming a mitzvah that was just bodily, and adding the soul into it. So just like, and the goal of this entire sefer that we're studying is to do that. Let's do that with our tefillin, let's do that with our brachos, let's do that with our tzitzis, let's do that with our shabbos, let's do that with, you know, every mitzvah that we do is learning to infuse the meaning behind it and combining the spiritual with the physical act. It doesn't just sit there. There's something there. Mm-hmm. Read the Rambam, you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. So that would be, and we could, I don't have time today, I'd like to get through this, but maybe that would be a project. You know, the kind of thing that, okay, once a day, twice a day, and finding, you know, the responsibility. But that's, if I would have known, you would have asked me that question, I would have prepared that. Maybe, if we have time, maybe we'll do that. Anyway, I want to point out Revolver's Ha'ara, his comments, and I want to get used to using that word a lot. So he has a ha'ara on Kriya Shema. What's his ha'ara? Isn't that interesting? The first paragraph has the order Torah, and then it puts tefillin and mezuzah. And then the second paragraph has tefillin first, and then it inserts Torah and concluding with mezuzah. Why is that? So Revolba says as follows, because the first paragraph, he says, starts off in the second paragraph in the by the letter Gimel. Harishona, the first paragraph is the Derech HaMelech. That's the like the king's way, the best way to do it. You start with Hashem Echad. You start on this lofty level of understanding the oneness of Hashem. And what comes from that? Ahavas Hashem. Right away you get into the first verse of Ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha, and you're thinking about loving Hashem, and the words of Torah are on your heart. It's everywhere that you go. It's when you walk on the path. It's when you sit in your home. It's teaching it to your children. What stems from that? What flows from this lofty level? The mitzvah that we need to do, the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of mezuzah. Says Rav Olbe, but in the second paragraph there's a major change. What is the bulk or a good chunk of the second paragraph get into? Problems. You stray from my path. And what am I going to do to you? Well, the rains will stop, the land will stop giving its produce, and you know where you're going to be? You're going to be exiled from the land. You're not going to be on this lofty level of walking around saying, Hashem Echad, Ve'ohavtas Hashem Elokecha, I'm loving God, and I'm thinking about those things. I fell. I fell, my generation fell, my people fell, I was sent into exile. Says Rav Olbe, how do you get back? What happens when you're in a generation that's not holding there? What happens when you're out of touch with these lofty levels that the Jew is supposed to attain? How do you re-attain those levels? So says Rav Olbe, that's why we switch the order. What's the first thing that we say to you to do? We don't say in the middle of the second paragraph, think about Hashem Echad. We don't say start with Ve'ohavta Es. We don't even start with Torah. What's the first thing we do? Get busy. Start doing mitzvahs. Put your tefillin on. When you start with your mitzvahs hama'asios, he writes, specifically, get busy with the things that you need to do with your body, because you're lost right now. So the way you don't get started right away with these lofty spiritual ideals, that's not how you get started in dragging yourself out of the mud. You get started by, okay, it's a little bit empty, I'm putting on my tefillin, I don't fully understand it. Put them on. Start doing all the mitzvahs. Start keeping Shabbos, making brachos, and doing all the things you need to do. Then, as that builds spiritual muscle being involved in the mitzvahs, then we have the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah comes after tefillin. The Limud HaTorah, which always represents filling the heart with the spirituality, the pure spiritual endeavor of the learning of Torah. And then, once you've now been able to achieve the ability to sit and learn again, what does it result in? More mitzvahs. Now put the mezuzah up on your door. So that the path, Rav Olbe says, I have a hara. I think the Torah is hinting at this idea. The ideal is, if you can start from a place of Hashem Echad and Va'ahaftas Hashem Elokecha, then you can go right to your learning of Torah, and you're holding in such a spiritual plane, your physical mitzvahs will stem from that place. But for the generations that aren't there, the generations that have been sent into exile, the order is different. The Torah is hinting at, just get started. He opens his parents, well, how do we start? How do we get to this place, this lofty ideal that we ended last week with? All of my mitzvahs are infused with my lave. They're infused with my heart. How do I get there? Start doing everything you need to do. Just get started. Just do it. Do everything that needs to be done. Through that, you'll be able to sit and learn. Through that, that will change everything, and you'll get back to doing the mitzvahs, the mezuzah, but now it's going to be a combination of, with the first two, with the physical and the spiritual combined all together. All right, that's just a little vort, a little dvar Torah that he's saying, which is backing up his idea that the main purpose of the spiritual component is to infuse life into the physical components. How do we start by doing the right thing? In other words, think about this for a minute. If we were to start with the mitzvah of mezuzah, which is what we were talking about before, and understanding all those concepts, with someone who doesn't have a mezuzah yet, you can't start. You have to start with something. I have mezuzahs up in all my rooms in my house. I've taken care of all of that. Now we can talk about adding to the meaning of what it means to have a mezuzah in your home. What does that do for you? What does it do? What's the thought process? But first, you got to be doing the right things. And then once you're there, we'll slowly, surely, every week work on another little aspect, another little thing in terms of infusing it. He holds that it's hinted at this process through the through these paragraphs of Shema. Okay, let's do the next paragraph. Again, as I said, the end of this hakdam, the end of this introduction, are just like proving his point. And he's got one more thing here. It's a beautiful thought, but let's go again. So he starts this fourth little paragraph, and again he says, You know, like, who's ever achieved this level that I'm talking about? Who's ever gotten there that they've, like, entered into this spiritual world? They've entered into this world of Pemius, their inner world. We started, what we said before we came, it was great watching the posts that everybody, you know, threw out. I think we were only just 4 or 5 this week that there, but that's what it's about, is being able to acknowledge certain things and recognize certain things and throw things out there and see a little bit of growth. And, you know, this is like a window. We're just, like, beginning to tap into a whole inner world. But who's ever gotten there before? So he writes, the goal, though, is if you can tap into this inner world that we're trying to develop, and again, we're at the very beginning, but just understanding there's something there, there's a way, there's a world to uncover, what that really is an opening into is into the real inner hidden world that exists in the world. This idea of the world's mask, it's the physical world that we see, but everything that you see, by definition, if you can see it, so it's Gashmi, it's part of the finite world, but there's an neshama behind that, just like the body has an neshama which gives the body life, and whatever I'm seeing, but it's not the neshama, because I can see it. There's something inside that's giving it life, just like there's a God who's giving life to the world that we exist in. Our ability to tap into that world will give us the ability to understand through that concept that we're tapping into that the bigger picture that's out there. So he explains this as follows. There's a Gemara in Maseches Brachos. It's a Mishnah, actually. It's a Mishnah in Brachos. The Mishnah says, this is the third paragraph, Kol choisnei brachos shebemikdash hayu omrim ad ha'olam. The Mishnah teaches that they used to conclude the blessings that were said in the Beis HaMikdash a little bit differently than we do. They would add the phrase, Baruch Hashem min ha'olam v'ad ha'olam. Blessed is Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael min ha'olam. Blessed is Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, min ha'olam. From, or I should say, Elokeisho ad ha'olam, until the world. That's what they used to say, that the Hashem should be blessed until the world. Ad ha'olam. What happened was, during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, not during the first Beis HaMikdash, but the second Beis HaMikdash, that Stukim, the Sadducees, were mekalkel. They started causing all sorts of trouble. The Sadducees didn't believe in the oral law. They only believed in the written law. So if you've ever noticed, the 5 books, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, there's no overt reference to the world to come. Mm-hmm. One of the major questions that's asked, I think, I'd like to discuss this question, I think it's a great question. And when you read through the Chumash, all the reward that's promised are this worldly kind of things, be it rain, be it crops, be it children, be it animals and good things, peace. There's no overt reference anywhere that says there's a concept of Olam Haba. That's not said anywhere. Chazal find it everywhere. They talk about it as if that's not as if they explain to us that really is the goal of everything. Everything is about Olam Haba, preparing ourselves in this world for the world to come, for the next world. That's what it's all about. But you don't find it in the written world. So the Sadducees, when they took hold during the time of the second period, so they denied that whole thing. They didn't think it was such a thing. They thought the world was this world and this world only. There's never going to be a Tchiyas HaMetim. There's not going to be a revival of the dead. There's not going to be a world to come. There's no judgment. It's all about the here and now. And they used to say, and you see, we have proof, because in the Beis HaMikdash, they conclude the blessings there by adding the phrase, blessed is Hashem, the God of the Jewish people, until this world. So you see it. That's only one world. It's this world and no other. So the sages said, that's not going to work. They changed the text during the second period, and they said, min ha'olam, ad ha'olam, from this world until the next world. So that they would institute that the phraseology that was used in the temple should reflect the Jewish ideal that there are two worlds, not just this world, but two worlds. That's what the Mishnah says, that in the times of the first temple, they only said, until this world. They didn't see there any problems. During the second temple period, Sadducees arose and used that as a proof to their argument that there was only one world. So they changed the text that it should reflect from this world until the next world, that it should be clear that the sages held that there were two worlds.
Why was there only one world to start
with? Why did he use that text?
Originally.
Ah, that's the one. That's what he talked about. Okay. So there was a sefer called the Nefesh HaChaim. The Nefesh HaChaim was written by Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Chaim Volozhiner was the principal student of the Vilna Gaon. He founded the yeshiva in Volozhin. The Volozhin was a famous yeshiva in Russia from 1801 to 1891 or 70, I think it came out 70 or 91, 7 years it stood in Volozhin until the late 1800s, so the Russian government basically shut it down. It was the primary yeshiva in all of Europe. All of the great minds went there. It was a fascinating place. And Chaim Volozhiner was he opened it up. He was a principal student of the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon died sometime in the 1700s, and he opened up the yeshiva in 1801. And he wrote a sefer called the Nefesh HaChaim. The Nefesh HaChaim has a lot of, I refrain from using the word Kabbalah, but a lot of those kinds of ideas and concepts in it. It's a classic sefer. Nefesh HaChaim it's called. So he writes, explaining this Mishnah, what's the idea here? What is the concept, exactly what Aaron is asking? Why, in the first temple, they apparently didn't have any problems. In the first temple, they just used the text of, blessed is Hashem from this world, or until this world. And only in the second temple, when the Sadducees came, they had to change the whole text, this world until the next world, to make clear, why did it only happen during the second temple period? So he writes, at the beginning of that fourth paragraph, the Mikdash HaRishon, there was a major difference, a fundamental difference between the first temple and the second temple. The Talmud actually describes there were five major differences during the two temples, five miraculous events which existed during the first temple period which did not exist during the second temple, even though the second temple in its structure was much more magnificent than the first temple. The Kotel, which we have today, was an outer wall of the second temple. King Herod rebuilt it and made it much more magnificent than the first temple ever was. But it was only magnificent in externals. The neshama of the Beis HaMikdash, the neshama of the first temple was gone. Because during the first temple period, there was the Hashras HaShechina, the divine presence rested on the first temple. There were a bunch of miraculous events which took place daily, and none of those things happened or existed during the second temple period. Primary, about that, they didn't have the Hashras HaShechina. Just a small little proof to this, the Hanukkah story took place during the Second Temple period, and it's referred to as Golos Yavan. There are four exiles that the Jewish people were to suffer, which is hinted at the very first words in the Torah of V'ha'aretz Ha'isa Choshech Tohu Vavo, V'choshech Al Panei Sahom. It was utter confusion and darkness in the face of the world. So Chazal, the sages say the four words of Tohu and Vo and Choshech and Tohum refer to four different exiles of the Jewish people were going to suffer from the Babylonians and from Greece and from Rome. So one of them is Greece. That exile took place while the Jews were in the land of Israel, while they had a temple, and they were in exile. Because despite the fact they were in the land of Israel, and there was even a temple that stood, but they were lacking the neshama of the Beis HaMikdash. The neshama of the Beis HaMikdash was the Shechina, was the divine presence, and it wasn't there. And despite the fact that we lived in Israel, and despite the fact we had a temple, we were still considered to be in Galus. Any case, says Rav Chaim Volozhin, during the first temple period, when the Shechina was there, the Ilmim Stimim Hayum Mischabrim Im Haniglos, let's leave that loosely translated as, everybody saw Hashem. They saw what was going on in the world. There he is. You'd walk through the Beis HaMikdash, and you would see Hashem. We don't even know what that means today, but that was the reality of the world that they lived in. You didn't need to prove to anybody there were going to be two worlds, because when you saw Hashem, that didn't just mean you saw a spiritual picture different than we can perceive today. They only needed to say, says Rav Chaim, the phrase, Ad Ha'olam. No one was going to get confused. There wasn't an option. However, during the second temple period, five of the miraculous events were missing, primary amongst them, the dwelling of the divine presence. Not everybody saw the yichud of Hashem. They didn't all see the oneness of Hashem. They didn't see the big picture. They didn't see the concept of this world and the next world. That opened up the door for the Mekilkalu HaMekalkin, for the Sadducees, and those who wanted to veer off the path, they were able to do so. So they needed to establish the changing of the text in order to battle those who had the opening to say what they wanted to say, because, look, they couldn't see the things the way that they used to see. So Rav Olba explains the words of Rav Chaim, says the hidden world and the revealed world are really one. The revealed world is the world that we live in. The hidden world is the world to come. It's nister, it's hidden, we don't see that. It's out there. But they're really, it's one. In the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, they were able to see that. Just like the body and the soul is one, this world and the next world are one. And during a time when you could feel ruchnius, you can feel spirituality, because there it is. There were prophets. There was no such thing. I used to have a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. Used to point this out also. There's no such. You don't find anywhere in Tanakh a kofer, someone who denies God. It didn't exist. The Jewish people can do all sorts of averis, but to deny God, it wasn't an option. Here, come. There were no debates. It wasn't a. It was like, take you by the hand, go to Yerushalayim. Here he is. End of story. So that wasn't an issue, and you don't find, even when they were Ovid of Avodah Zarah and they did idolatry, it was never, there is no God. It's that there are other powers, or he even writes that their ability to see clearly the concept of spirituality caused the Avodah Zarah, because they saw so many other concepts and abilities and powers, they just, with the phrase that the Zohar and others use, they were cutlets and tzitzis, they like cut the connection between God and all the other powers, and just serve the other powers, not leaving them connected to Hashem. For another time. But to deny God, to not to see a spiritual component to the world, that was absurd. That wasn't an issue that they struggled with during the first temple, because there he was. You saw spirituality, you saw an insight into other worlds that didn't require debates. However, he writes, "Bibayis sheini." But what happened in the time of the second period, the second temple period, where they did not have the Gilui Shechina, they didn't have a revelation of Hashem's presence. So what created, what happened, is Havet Pirud. There was a separation, a disconnect between the Olam HaNira LeEinayim, between the world that is seen by our eyes, Ubein HaOlam HaElyon, and the upper worlds. There now was two separate concepts. There's the world that I see, and then there's a world that I'm being taught about, a world that someone's teaching me and telling me exists. I don't see it. And not only do I not see it, I don't have any way to visualize and experience it other than something else. But it's not like if you live in times of the first Beis HaMikdash, with your eyes, you can see a hidden world. You would go to the Beis HaMikdash, and you would see God. Those are words, but they don't have any meaning to us. I mean, you could see God. There was Hashra'as Hashchina, the divine presence, dwelt in the Beis HaMikdash. You would go there, and you would somehow feel, see, sense Ruchnius. You'd see God. So if I told you, do you know that there's a next world? And like, I'm not telling you, like, duh. Like, what are you saying? Obviously. When that disappeared, what happened was the world that is no longer seen isn't seen. It's not felt. It's not there in a tangible way. And now I have a disconnect between the world that I see and the spiritual world, because when Hashem took His presence out of the world, He took that window into the Olam HaElyon, into the upper world, the world of spirituality, pulled it back and left it up there. It's not here anymore. So now that opens up a possibility. A Sadducee can come along and say there's no such thing as the next world. And now you need to debate him. You need to find a scriptural proof. I need to somehow, I can't take you by the hand and say, come Yingele, let me show you Hashem. Let me show you a spiritual world that exists. Where are you going to take him? So they needed to change the text, specifically only in the second temple, to fight that. But that only existed in the second temple. How much more does it exist with the destruction of the second temple? We don't even have that, and it's been 2,000 years of exile. Says Revolva, Hamizboinein v'ha'oivet, somebody who contemplates, somebody who works, somebody who thinks. Yochol lahargish be'ichud ha'olam uskam v'bayishen. He can also sense that, two worlds, how they're really one, during the time of the Second Temple. But it came with work, it came with his boininess, it came with contemplation. Aval hargosha chushis, but to feel it, to sense it, that was not just open for everybody to. It just wasn't there anymore. Hashem, that was the. What do we mourn when we mourn the destruction of the second temple? That's what we mourn. We mourn the loss of that divine presence. We mourn the loss that I have to struggle with. Is there another world? I have to struggle with. Can I get in touch with that? I'm so far removed. I do my mitzvahs and they're empty. Ramban writes, on Greek, on their Greek culture, Hayivoni Haor, the cursed Greek culture, She'eino ma'aminim ela bima she'einehem rolos. They only believed in what their eyes saw. Ramban describes the infiltration of the Greek culture. That's what it was about. It was about a culture that said, if I see it, if you can show it to me, if you can prove it, touch it and feel it, I believe that it exists. But if you're going to tell me that there's something that I can't see, they denied it. That's what we struggle with, because we've been teaching for 2,000 years, despite the fact that because of our actions, God said, I cannot live with you anymore in this world. And I'm removing that, but that it was once there, and that it's still here, and it's just going to take us a lot more work to be able to get in touch with that, and to be able to find it. And that's why they established the phrase to say, Min ha'olam yad ha'olam, he writes, Lahamidenu al ha'emes, to make sure the sages understood that we should know the truth, Ki olam ruchni elyon oymed al gabi ha'olam hazeh, that there is a spiritual world which exists parallel to the world that is seen, ha'nir al-einayim. Yes, we live in a world that is seen, but that there's a world that is unseen, which exists as well. The loyrak she'im lanu lehakchish, not just that we shouldn't deny that it exists, we should believe and feel that it's there. The sages didn't want us just to know that it exists. They wanted us to still be able to feel it, to be able to understand that it is still there. Quotes from the Ramban, all of the mitzvahs that we do are mikareves osanu el ha'olam haruchni. The purpose, the mitzvahs that we do, bring us closer, connect us to that. Some of the one, first we need to start even though we don't understand. And just by doing them, each time we do that, we do these physical acts which we don't fully understand, and somehow it's connecting to a world that exists, that we know is there, that we don't see with our eyes, but that these activities that we engage in are somehow bringing us closer. Every word of Torah that we learn, every mitzvah that we do, every time we think about Hashem, we fulfill the mitzvahs, somehow creates that connection to those worlds. Alright, let's finish the last paragraph and then choose an assignment. Rav Older writes that the destruction of the second temple, Poseach Tkufa Chadosha V'Dargas Klal Yisrael, began a new stage of our avodah. During the first temple, it was a spiritual world that we lived in. The presence of God dwelled in the world. And that temple was destroyed, and when they rebuilt the second basement, because they didn't have that anymore. But at least you had a base on Mikdash. When that was destroyed, that's plummeted us into a whole new type of avodah. Quotes from the Gemara. The Gemara asks, Mikdash Rishon Mipnei Macha. Why was the first base of Mikdash destroyed? The Gemara asks. The Gemara answers, because of the three things which existed, Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichos Damim. Idol worship, illicit relationships, and murder. What happened in the first base of Mikdash? The behavior of the Jewish people collapsed. You could look, and you would see what is going on over here. Murder, illicit relationships, idolatry. The society has collapsed. Says the Gemara, Aval Mikdash Sheni. But during the second temple, Shonu B'Kiyinbo, Hayu Oyskin B'Torva Mitzvah Gmilas Chasod. And we know, the people of the second temple, they were learning, they were doing mitzvahs, they were involved in chesed. Mipnei Manecha. The Gemara asks, I don't understand. The Gemara, the first one I understand, society fell apart. The three capital crimes that a person has to give up his life for, rampant, all over the place. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. God said, I'm not going to live in a world like this. Second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara asks, what happened? They were learning. They were doing mitzvahs. They're doing chesed. Why was it destroyed? And says the Gemara, Bnei Shehaisebo, Sinas Chinam. Sinas Chinam? They had baseless hatred for each other. Their inner worlds were destroyed. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Elazar the Armin Shavai quotes two sages said, Rishonim Shinis Gala Alvoinam, the first temple where their sin was revealed, Nisgala Kitem. simple meaning was where it was open and revealed what their sin was, the duration, the end of the exile was also revealed. We have in the prophets that there was a prophecy that was only going to last 70 years. First exile where their sin was open and revealed, the duration was open and revealed. Achroinim shaloi niskala avoinim, the second temple in which their sin was not revealed, lo niskala kitzomi, has not been revealed when it's going to end. Says Rav Olva, the bayis hasheni was nechrav meishen nechrav olomo hafnimi shal hador. The second temple was destroyed because the inner world of the generation had been destroyed. The inner world of the Jews was destroyed. As opposed to the first temple, where they were stumbled with averus chamurus ma'o, the worst of the sins, but oilomum hapnimi lo harsu avonos eile. It wasn't that it was their inner world that was destroyed, it was their behavior, their external behavior, was nizgala avonim, it was open and revealed what they were doing wrong. Ha'avon hoya begilui. There it was, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichos Donim, and murder, and illicit relationships, and idolatry. Therefore, the end was also revealed. It was a specific Zman. They returned to Eretz Yisrael, they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. But the second Beis HaMikdash, which was Sinas Chino, baseless hatred. If you'd look at anybody, you wouldn't know what's going on in the outside world. He learns every morning. So in Chassad, he's in charge of the Gemach, he's in charge of this, there are people doing mitzvahs, they're learning, they're doing kind things. Aval gam maisi ha-chesed lo he'idu ala hava shevalei, but just because a person is doing chesed is not testifying to what's really going on in their heart. The Gemara says, the sages, the prophets had to reveal this, because who knew, how did they know what was going on? Therefore, kisinas chinam, this baseless hatred, shehi shoresh hamidos haros, which is at the all bad midos, comes from this inability to love your fellow Jew. The fact that you have this baseless hatred destroyed their inner world, and the destruction of the inner world caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And he writes, Rav Olva, this is the principle of Yesod, midos ros, bad inside, internal character traits, Hein chorvon olamo hapnimi shel ha'adam, destroys the inner world of a person. Having a person with bad midos is a destruction of his inner world. And when the inner world of the Jew is destroyed, Hashem said, well, then I'm going to destroy the outer world of the Beis HaMikdash. But because it was the inner world that was destroyed, we don't know when it's going to be. When the redemption will come is also not revealed. Don't know when it's going to be.
I find it so hard to believe that, when the Shekhinah was like in Yerushalayim, that these people would be doing this.
We can't understand what it was like. The Gemara says that already. The Gemara said, we don't do a Vodazah. How could they be doing a Vodazah back then? The Gemara says, if you would have lived then and would have understood what it meant to have a Yetzirah for a Vodazah, you, the sage who's asking this question, would be picking up the hems of your pants to run fast enough, to run faster to the houses of idol worship. You know, the whole piece of the sages prayed to nullify the desire for Avodah Zarah. The Jewish people couldn't handle it. I think we discussed that once. You know, it was so rampant. They prayed, they said, we can't handle this. They have to take away the desire for Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says the sages were answered, and their Hashem was mevatel, he nullified. They no longer have a desire for idol worship. So the sages said, the Gemara says, that worked well. Let's nullify the desire for illicit sexual relationships as well. So they davened for that. Hashem said, you got it. And the Gemara said that by within the next week, there was not even a single egg which existed in the land of Israel. There was just mating stopped across the board. Humans, animals, there was nothing there. So they said, oh, forget this isn't going to work. The world's going to be destroyed. No one's going to have any children. So they said, okay, just nullify the desire for familial relationships. So there's no desire for one's sister or one's mother, but we'll keep everything else and deal with it. And that's what we have today, where if you ever paid attention, despite the fact that every man who is alive will have desires for every other woman who's alive, it simply just doesn't exist for one's family members. It's not there. It's not there. But outside it is. So the Gemara always says, if you want to know what it was like to have a desire for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry, drive past a billboard and see if you can keep your eyes off of it. And as difficult as that is, you say, look, it's meaningless. What is it? It's nothing. That's what it means to have a Yetzirah. That is pure Yetzirah, because when I ask you to do idolatry, you look at it and say, I don't know, that doesn't tempt me. That seems sort of silly to me. Worship the sun. Why? Like, what does it mean, worship the sun? That's the difference between having a Yetzirah and not having a Yetzirah. Driving by a billboard is the Yetzirah. And it's always been an insight to me. Like, that's the power of what a Yetzirah is. We don't have it for idolatry. But can you imagine if we have to deal with both of them at the same time?
Yeah.
So Sage says, forget, we can't deal with it. So he just nullified the whole thing. And the Gemara says, but if you were to live then, you'd be picking up the hems of your pants to run faster to the houses of idol worship.
It sort of makes sense. I was reading once that, you know, the quote and sacrifice outside the temple was invalid and was also a sin. And yet people would come to Yerushalayim and they couldn't make it. And they would make a sacrifice outside of Jerusalem, but they couldn't hold off long enough to get to Jerusalem.
Right. I mean, we just don't have a connection to it. We just don't understand the whole concept, 100%. Right. Well, we just don't get it. But we get Gilead Rise, right? List of relationships that we get. Right. We're still holding there in our society. So we understand. We understand that one. Okay, Zuya MS, this is completely the last two paragraphs. Ein hasaga amitis, vein hargosha amitis nimtis velei, vasher sina mikanenes bo. A heart which has hatred in it will never achieve attainments of a hargosha, of a sense, of a feeling, of the thing that we're trying to achieve. The destruction of the heart was the destruction of everything. That's what brought about the whole second. That's where everything starts, from the destruction of the inner world. And if we are desiring to build our inner worlds, we've stood now upon the first fundamental point, lishtol bilibeinu midas tovos, to create, to plant in our hearts midas tovos. The midas, our traits, our character traits, have to be pure. That's the place where you need to start to build this inner world, which we're starting with, in order to infuse our external mitzvahs with internal meaning. It has to start from within the lathe, and the lathe has to be a heart that is giving, a heart that is pure, a heart that is loving. Yisod ha-chinuch le-Torah ma'o. So what is the foundation for beginning the chinuch, the education in Torah? The central point is the lathe, the concept of his heart. Mishom niftach lefanenu ha'olam hanister. From the heart will open up this hidden world. The hidden world, the upper elyon, the world of in shamayim, so to speak. And from there will be yushpa, will spread the influence of holiness onto our guf and the world of action that we live in as well. Olamo ha'pnimi aleinu livenos ayde omel v'yagia v'midos u'mitzvos kam yachar. And how do we build this inner world? It's going to be through toiling in our developing our midos and developing our mitzvos. So really what it is, I just crammed in a whole other idea into this last little section. There are basically two ideas. One is developing in our mitzvos, that the mitzvos that we do become infused with heart, and then that our heart itself becomes developed. So the real, I guess we could have done this whole thing as a whole separate mess. Whatever. We crammed it into two separate ideas. This idea of developing the heart. But that's where it comes from. It starts from just doing the mitzvahs, getting into that pattern, and then it begins developing the meanings behind it. To understand to get used to the idea that behind the world that we see, there's really a world that we do not see. And that came about with the destruction of the temple when Hashem took his presence out of the world, so we don't see it anymore, and we have to therefore work on other ways of developing that, to sense it and to feel it, and then to develop the heart into a seat of a place which is capable of doing that, through developing the midos, through developing our traits, our hearts in a right place where we can contain them. That's going to be the two-pronged approach that's going to be through our continuous studies, taking the mitzvahs that we do and infusing them with heart, and then taking the midos and developing those as well. All right, so we'll have to do an email homework assignment because we're running out of time for Marv now. Let's see quickly. So what should be our homework assignment for the week? I'm inclined to go with this last little thing that he did, the idea of the sinas chinam, that the second temple was destroyed because of the destruction of our inner world and the baseless hatred. I would like to This is a big one. I'm not sure if we're ready for this one, because this is like jumping right in. I would like to continue our email dialogue in which you come across a situation in which you, I don't say are in violation of sinus chinam, but where you dislike or disregard someone without just cause. Just let's start paying attention. Jew, non-Jew, just how many times we come across in our daily interactions where we get annoyed, frustrated, dislike, and...
I can email you right now.
Yeah. I mean, but to be in touch with it. In other words, I know that when I point that out, sure, we all do it all the time. Yeah. And I obviously don't want names in your stories, but there should be emails that are like, I had the following interaction, and it occurred to me that I didn't give the person the benefit of the doubt, I blew him off, something. Let's just get in touch with how far we are from being able to love. I guess it would be best to focus on fellow Jews, but it could be just any interaction. Let's get into touch. It is quite a major assignment. We'll see how that goes. Okay, let's do that tomorrow.